fellow locker residents, this is a very special episode of Inside the Locker here on oneofus.net. This is the weekly nerdy sportcast that is always your Huckleberry. But make no mistake, it's not revenge for our oppressed youth we're after. It's a reckoning. I'm your host, Brian Salisbury, starting hunter for the Mandalorian Fets. And I am joined by the three amigos of nerdy sports enthusiast, Mr. JC DeLeon.
What up, what up?
Elliot Fontanette. Okay.
I like that one.
And our neighbor, Adam Charles.
Hello.
Guys, this is a very exciting show. We are getting back into the movie tournament thing.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
First time with a full crew.
First time with a full crew, indeed.
My first time being in on one, so this is cool.
Yep. JC, I'm pretty sure you are way too nice a guy to actually debate anything.
And I'll kill all you motherfuckers.
I will smash you. I will smash you and bang you. I will smang you. Anyway.
Here's the thing. JC is such a he's such a nice guy, but like it would be scary because he's an imposing man if he wasn't nice.
Yeah, no, he'll kill you. Like, this is all a facade, what you're seeing right now. And tonight we have a special guest.
Can I just step in?
Yeah, go ahead.
Real quick. This is Jeremy Kirk with the Golden Briefcase and First Showing Down Dead.
I don't want to take your job.
We were about to do that.
You're taking my job because I'm the one who steps on his stuff.
Did you just Kanye West me on my own fucking show?
Hold on, I'm dating the Hobbit.
President Bush does not care about JC. JC is like that bear at the end of Roadhouse.
I thought you were going to say Great Outdoors.
That falls on the fat guy. He's not the fat guy. He is the bear that falls on the fat guy.
When was there a bear in
Roadhouse? I thought you meant like a different type of bear. I was like, that explains so much.
Where is this going?
I mean, Sam Elliott's a big hairy guy. But...
No, I know what he's talking about. They
should remake Roadhouse with Oil Can Harry's.
And now let me introduce our special guest. He's the co-host of the Golden Briefcase podcast over at firstshowing.net. Mr. Jeremy Kirk.
Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. I'm not regretting
it. Thanks for introducing
me. Not regretting it at all. He's going to be our guest judge for tonight's movie tournament, but we'll get into that in just a moment. I do want to remind you that Inside the Locker, just like all of our content here on oneofus.net, is available on iTunes. Just search One of Us in the podcast section. You can also follow the show on Twitter at ITLcast, and you can follow the whole website on Facebook. You can like it on Facebook, rather, at facebook.com/oneofusnet. Please consider as well becoming a subscriber to the site. You can give $1 to $25 every month or just make a one-time donation. We really appreciate your support. It's how we help. That's how you help us continue to bring this content to you on a weekly basis. And it sure is kind of you. So definitely consider doing that. Before we go any further, it's the moment you've all, or at least four of you, have been waiting for. The winner of our Inside the Locker Fantasy Football Conference Winner Trivia Challenge, because we like things with names that are way too long.
Man, that ended a long time ago.
It really did, yeah. We're just now crowning a champ. Like, we're just now finishing up fantasy football, and it's been done for a while. Anywho, that's not the point, JC. It was a hard-fought battle, but there can be only one. And that one, ready for this? You ready? The winner is David Harkins from Elliott's League.
So, woo!
Congratulations to David, followed by, in this order, Blake from my league, Brian Carney from Adam's league, and our Miss Congeniality goes to Scott Smidlin from JC's league. So our grand prize winner will get his very own trophy with his name inscribed on it, as well as first through third place will also receive a box set of ESPN 30 for 30 Season 2 on Blu-ray. And our last place finisher, I'm actually really, really excited about this, receives a signed copy of Dreams and Shadows with a personal message from author and former Spill critic C. Robert Cargill, alias Carlisle. And I think you'll really enjoy that. So JC will be in touch with all of you over the next couple days to get your mailing addresses and such. And,
I will.
Yeah, JC, get in touch with these people the next couple days to get their mailing addresses and such.
Cool, got it.
We will send those prizes right out.
We run a tight ship around here.
So tight, in fact, that it is the end of February before we can officially call the football season closed.
For I am not a cabin boy, I'm a cabin man.
Yes, okay. thanks for playing, everybody. We'll definitely be doing this again next year if we're still a thing. So... Hooray for cryptic messages. Before we get into the movie tournament tonight, is there any sports news you guys want to cover on this sports show? Just to change things up a little bit, I guess.
The Olympics besides Russia and...
USA beat the shit out of Russia in hockey.
Yeah, they did. Do you believe in second miracles?
Also,
Or things that were actually pretty likely to happen.
Our life after love.
Well, this is the second time.
Well, for this game, it wasn't so much a miracle. The question you could ask is, do you believe in minuscule technicalities?
I do.
Yes.
Because,
those are awesome.
Yes.
Because Russia actually pulled ahead late in the game with a goal that looked like it was a good goal, but the net moved a tiny inch before the puck went in the net. And so that's actually against the rules. And so it was Russian officials who were in Russia who were like, hey, that goal doesn't count for us. So USA, get another shot.
USA, good.
Yeah, and then the game ended in a really in an epic shootout with a hockey player by the last name of Yoshi.
What? Are you for serious?
Did he shoot the puck with his tongue?
was
he being ridden by Mario?
He actually shot four times in that shootout, and the final goal didn't go post right or post left; went right through the goalie's legs.
Nice,
beautiful.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Did anybody do a triple deke?
I don't know.
Damn it.
Does anyone know if that net has been shot?
Vladimir Putin has expressed his displeasure with the outcome of the game, and so those referees are probably dead.
Yeah, they're at the very least, they're going to end up in gulags for the rest of their lives.
So the net moved in their favor? Like, as he was shooting the puck, the net moved towards the puck?
No, the net moved like a tiny inch. It's just the rule is the net has to be where it's supposed to be when the puck gets
the
in
rule
the net.
Is the net
just
has to be moved. Where it's supposed to be.
Okay, so why don't you just make the net immovable?
Someone breathed on the net.
Well, there's actually in hockey there's a tiny like rod that gets placed in the ice that the net actually sits in, but when players crash into it, sometimes the net
moves. And there's a reason for that too, is because you know if you have players skating at top speed crashing into something solid and steel, you want it to give a little bit so that they don't end up paralyzed. So it's sort of a shock absorber that it can. I'm making this up. It could not be the case at all, but it sounds like science.
I would just think when you crash into a rod, sometimes the net slips. I don't know.
Is that what? Is that? Are you trying to make a gay joke?
Condom joke. Whichever.
Whichever. All right.
It's a shotgun approach.
You realize that if you make gay jokes in Russia, they send you to prison, right? Like, that's something that they do.
Yeah, that is true. Are you going to start singing
Actually,
Get
I don't
lucky
think if you're going to make a gay joke anywhere, you might want to make it in Russian.
I like your intolerance. Yes.
All I'm saying is that I am not staging a Pussy Riot protest to get Elliot out of prison in Russia. That's just, I've got shit to do.
But I will be down with a Pussy Riot. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, let's start a Pussy Riot right now.
Are any of you members of Pussy Riot?
I'm not, actually.
Because I hear that they have, like,
they have
how many numbers of...
I thought they had strict, like, anti-Y chromosome
anyone could
admission
be
policies. Oh, is that not right?
I think they made Stephen Colbert a member.
I'm sorry, Michael Myers is calling me. I better check on that real quick. Stephen, well, yeah. Know. Like, I mean, Stephen Colbert can Touch be it. An honorary member of whatever he wants.
Yeah.
Because he's Stephen Colbert.
I just didn't know how much the Pussy Riot had infiltrated.
Okay.
I know it infiltrated Bob Costas' mouth because he kept saying it over and over.
Yeah. Hearing Bob Costas say Pussy Riot and then seeing him get pink eye, it sounds like he went to some really bizarre strip club or something.
Yeah. What's funny is the day after that on ESPN, I don't think ESPN gave any of the radio talk show hosts permission to say Pussy Riot because they kept referring to them as the Riot all day.
Oh, the Riot.
One guy. When,
thank you, America.
So is it like a verbal dental dam?
I don't know. One guy went on a 10-minute diatribe about how he couldn't say the word.
The P word riot?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Can we start a Steely Dan tribute band called Dental Dan? Can that be a thing that we do?
It's this thing that you try to use and it just sort of gets in the way and you stop.
It does. And you know what is funny is I didn't know what a damn Dental Dan was until Christmas this year. I always thought I knew what it was.
Did you get one for Christmas?
No. Somebody explained it to me. I just remember I was hanging out with friends and someone explained it to me. I was like, oh, it's not the thing that I thought it was.
I learned what it was from the movie Booty Call.
Yes! You mean it has nothing to do with Beaver?
Yeah, well, kind of. It's not totally off base to say that.
So it does block a flow. That's what we'll say.
The point of all of this dental dam talk is that USA beat Russia in hockey in the Olympics, which is pretty fucking marvelous in a lot of ways. It's Rocky IV. It's the Red Dawn. It's everything that we loved about 80s movies where they really oversimplified the conflict between America and Russia to the point that Sylvester Stallone could punch down the Berlin Wall and end communism with a single speech. I feel like we're reaching that point again. It's like America beating Russia in the Olympics. That's really all we need to ensure that it's mutually assured destruction on the ice.
I don't follow hockey. Is Russia still considered just good, like the gold standard of hockey?
Like not exactly the gold standard, but they're very good. Since the miracle on ice, the USA has only beaten Russia twice, I think, in international hockey.
Okay.
So that's good. That was a good story. We did good with that.
I tell you something. I watched the Americans a few Saturdays ago, the entire season, and one thing it sort of shows to you is just how much that conflict was center stage back then. Just that you don't realize now because it's been so long, and just how big of a deal it was to beat the USSR back then.
You were just watching War Games. You weren't watching the Americans. I keep trying to tell you this. Well, that is the movie War Games. God damn it, Elliot.
So I like what was it, Raw Heat, the buddy cop movie where a Russian Arnold Schwarzenegger teams up with an American Jim Belushi.
Yeah.
I still like to think that those characters still kind of personify
American. Here's a quiz, American, which one's the better actor?
Russian.
The guy who convinced anyone to fund that movie is the best actor in that situation. I just want to say this about
Schwarzenegger did a good job.
The Schwarzenegger Belushi, like, one is Russian, one is American. I don't believe either of those pieces of casting. And Belushi is actually American, and I still don't fucking believe it.
The movie takes place in Chicago, and he is from Chicago.
I still don't believe it.
He's out of his element.
He's that bad.
Ross is good in that.
That's true. So, the other thing that we probably need to talk about is the All-Star Game. Because what it demonstrated is how alive and well the concept of always playing your hardest on defense really is in the NBA, especially at the All-Star Game. There was so much defense that it was like a point could barely be scored in that. What was the final score?
163-155.
Were they playing Washington overtime? Generals? Did both teams just team up on, like, that's insane to me. That is too many points.
Was that no overtimes?
Yep, no overtimes.
Were they 163-158?
55.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah. It was a defensive struggle, for sure. Nobody.
So is that like the highest scoring game against the second highest scoring game ever?
It's the highest scoring. It broke 11 different records.
Yeah, including apathy. It leads the league in apathy. I mean, it was fun to watch. It was essentially just a dunk contest.
So who was the guy who did not score in double digits?
A couple guys didn't score in double digits. Dirk Nowitzki actually didn't score at all.
Which is, I guess, par for the course for him at this age.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tony Parker scored 8 points.
It's like one of the five guys.
Paul Millsap, I think, scored 6.
What about Swaggy P? Was he not in there?
Swaggy P is not an All-Star, sadly.
No, not sadly.
Only in our hearts.
Appropriately, that little asshole is not an All-Star. For fuck's sake. Anyway, so that was fun to watch. A bunch of...
points.
Yeah, it was just point scoring. I mean, there was nothing else going on. Like, there was more time spent on the opening ceremonies than there was by anybody playing defense.
Kind of frustrating. I'm like,
In fact, by the time they finished, they got to the end of the opening ceremonies, but when they started, it was still called Old Orleans. That is how long it fucking took. It is insane. Jeremy, did you watch the All-Star game?
No, I don't really even follow basketball. Does the All-Star game count for anything?
No, there is absolutely nothing.
It's just a big promotion for the strip clubs and hookers in that city.
Yeah.
It's a subsidy.
It is, absolutely. Cool. And we got to, I don't even remember which team won.
The East won?
Okay.
Why does it matter?
It doesn't.
I mean,
does anybody get anything from it?
The players actually do get, I think they get $50,000 if they're the team that wins.
So try and wrap your head around this. It is the one time during the season that these guys are playing basketball for financial gain. Wait a minute. No, that's the entire season.
Yeah.
It still makes no sense.
It's a showcase for the fans. They get to see all of their favorite players in one game. In the playoffs, the play is so intense. You don't see a lot of the stuff that Blake Griffin does during the season. There's not as much dunking during the playoffs because it's that intense. And so, it's just a good time for fans to see the types of plays that get people excited.
Well, I tell you that the best All-Star game for basketball happens every 4 years when the Dream Team comes together. Because then you can see the Dream Team actually trying to beat teams that are sort of as good as
them. Well, not the one year they won the bronze.
Didn't we lose to Macedonia or some shit?
Well, they had Stephen Marbury on there as one of their marquee stars. We deserve to lose.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think you can call them the Dream Team every year because the Dream Team is the 92 team. There's never been a collection of talent akin to... Well, except for Christian Laettner. Apart from Christian Laettner, that is the greatest collection of talent in one place. And yes, I'm including Joss Whedon's The Avengers in this statement. The greatest single collection of talent in one place at any one time.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, words are going to fail to capture the majesty of the league's premier athletes meeting on one stage, to barely put forth any effort for 48 minutes. I mean, it's just, it's incredible to watch in all kinds of ways. But it happened. We've addressed it.
Yet they count, like, the records and everything with the All-Star game. They still count those against all the other records for all regular games.
No, against All-Star games. Just against All-Star games.
Okay, good. All right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody knows that defense is not a priority at the All-Star game. In fact, I think my brother had the best quote of the night. He saw Roy Hibbert out there from the Indiana Pacers, and he's like, why is Roy Hibbert in the All-Star game? He's a defensive star. That's like wearing a bulletproof vest to a pillow fight. I was like, yeah, that's actually pretty true. There's really no reason to get, like, the league's best defender. Like, it's kind of overkill, I think, at that point. Like,
it's like Black Widow and the Avengers. You're like, why are you here?
Mm-mm. Well, I think it's because...
No, it would be like the Hulk against a bank robber. It's like, it's not necessary. It's unnecessary force.
I think it's because since nobody else is playing defense, that gives him the opportunity to actually score points in front of fans.
It would look like, you know, if Kevin Hart, who for some reason is involved in other aspects of the All-Star Weekend... If he was out there playing and just getting rejected every single time, that's like Roy Hibbert playing actual defense against the offense in the All-Star game. So it happened, and we've addressed it, so there's the All-Star game. The other thing I want to talk about, did you guys hear about this thing at the Assembly Hall where Indiana University plays basketball, why they've canceled their game with Iowa tonight?
No.
So there's a camera inside the stadium, okay? And they have footage where nobody's in there. You know, it's obviously a camera that just runs all day because nobody's in there. Nothing's going on, and all of a sudden in the top right corner of the screen, you just see this huge, like, sheet of metal fall and hit a seat.
Paranormal Activity.
No, it's a faceplate from the ceiling that fell and destroyed a couple of the seats, and they decided to cancel the game until they figure out what's going on. My theory is that it's a failed kill from one of the Final Destination films. Like, there was probably a lot of shit that happened before that in the Rube Goldberg machine that are the Final Destination movies, and they just went too early, and they missed their target. So now, like, 14 other people are going to have to die because someone was supposed to be sitting there.
See, I think it's the next spinoff. I think Katie Featherston is somewhere around that stadium because that camera's running 24/7. We're going to see, like, what's the next racial stereotype we're going to play off of in the Paranormal Activity movie.
If it's a college basketball, I can guess. I can throw out a possibility.
It's going to be the only found footage movie where the characters scream at you while you're watching the movie.
I did not say that. I want it noted that I did not make that comment. That was not made by me. But I will say that it'll be really short because as soon as anything starts going wrong, they're just going to leave. What were we talking about? Yeah, so it was really creepy to watch. It was just like, out of nowhere, just a chunk of the ceiling falls on a seat. And it's like, yeah, I can kind of get behind. Let's cancel the game until we figure out why our building is falling down around us.
They're lucky that happened before the game because, man, that happens during the game.
Yeah.
Whew.
Fucking A. Well, that's, unless anybody has anything else they think we desperately need to talk about, I'd say that that's pretty much it for sports news, and it's time to move into the Inside the Locker, Totally Accurate, Desperately Important Movie Elimination Tournament! Dun, 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 dun! Again, we like titles that are way too long. So this is the second pass at doing these elimination tournaments. We'll be doing these pretty much from here until... You know, the next few months are over. But this is our second pass at it, so I kind of feel like it's the remake of the first time we did this. So in honor of this, our subject tonight, what is the best remake? It doesn't have to be from any specific genre, but what is the best remake of a given film? And tonight, we are going to settle that once and for all, or at least for now. And Jeremy Kirk is going to serve as our celebrity judge.
Thank you for having me on to do that.
Yeah,
how many movies do you have going against
us? Because we didn't have a lot of time to prepare this first one, we're just going to roll with the Sweet 16.
Okay.
So we've kind of decided upon, and you know what, guys out there, you're listening to this, you think there's a movie that we left off that should have been within the Sweet 16?
And there probably is.
There probably is. Feel free to mention that in the comments. We'll definitely discuss that. But for now, because we had so little time to prepare this first one, we're just going to do the Sweet 16. And JC, do you want to let us, I'm sure we'll have a little graphic or something there at the bottom, but can you let us know which films are in the Sweet 16 of the remake tournament?
Yes. And,
we divided these up by regions just because that's more like actual March Madness, not because these movies actually take place in any particular region of the country.
You give them seeds.
We do.
So, I mean, I forget the rankings now, but the matchups as we have them. So the movies,
in no particular order. We've got The Thing, Blowout, Man on Fire. Is it The Man Who Knew Too Much?
Or yes, The Man Who Knew Too
Much. The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Ironic question.
Ocean's 11.
I'm sorry. That was funny, Ellie. That was a good one.
Well, because in all the other emails, it was always to lift out the.
No. I know, but I just.
William Goss is the one who's always like, you forgot a word. And
yeah, no. You know, he's a grammar Nazi. But with the fact that Elliot made a great joke, and we are so unaccustomed to that happening that we just breezed right by it initially, is pretty remarkable. Yeah. Anyway.
So Ocean's 11, The Birdcage, The Fly, The Good, The Bad, The Weird, Scarface, Dawn of the Dead, The Ring, Fistful of Dollars, The Blob, True Grit, The Departed, and Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
All right, well, there is your Sweet 16, and as you will be able to tell within the bracket below, you know exactly who's got which movies. Adam has his grouping of movies is The Thing, Birdcage, The Ring, and Invasion of the Body Snatchers. JC's lineup is Blowout, The Good, The Bad, and The Weird, Scarface, and True Grit. My lineup is The Man Who Knew Too Much, The Fly, Fistful of Dollars, and The Blob. And Elliot is Man on Fire, Ocean's 11, Dawn of the Dead, and The Departed. Now, before we get started, I feel like the really important question philosophically, have you actually seen all these movies, Elliot?
Yes, I have.
Okay, well then that's
because those are the movies I actually saw.
I'm going to say
a fear of that.
I'm just saying this. Fuck USA Russia hockey. I believe in miracles now because there are four movies picked at random that Elliot has actually seen.
Oh, that's right. Jeremy doesn't know Elliot. Elliot hasn't seen.
Yeah, he doesn't
movies.
Watch movies.
Oh,
so this is
he's starting. He's
we're learning him. We're
baby,
learning him.
Baby steps.
Baby steps.
I watch too much anime. It's a thing.
That sound you just heard is crippling sadness. So congratulations, Elliot.
I like crippling sadness. It's like a nice warm blanket.
There are no good anime remakes, are there?
No. No. There's no
actually,
good.
You know what? The Seven Samurai remake is what is it called? Samurai Seven?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good series.
Okay. I thought the animated Samurai Seven remake was Space Jam.
No, first of all, that is the animated Seven Samurai remake. Okay. And it, you listen to me, you hear me now, go back and watch that movie and believe me, Space Jam is a remake of The Seven Samurai, except that they whittled seven guys into one 7 foot tall basketball player.
I think Brian right now is cribbing for an article you wrote, what, a few years ago?
Yes. Yes.
It's been, I remember
it's
that
existing
article.
For a long time. Shut up, Elliot. All right. So here's how, if you weren't around here for a holiday movie elimination tournament, here's how it works. So we've each been assigned these movies, we've been broken up into a bracket. And each movie will go head-to-head with another film within its division. And the way it works is that each of us has a movie. We're each given 1 minute to put forth the argument as to why our movie is better than the one that we're taking on. And then it'll be up to our guest judge to decide who put forth the stronger case. Now, bear in mind, judge, it's not about which movie is better on paper. It's not about which movie you prefer. I want you to base your decision entirely on who made the better argument.
So completely blank my mind of any of these movies.
Yeah.
Tonight I'm Elliot.
Sever your...
I have not seen any of these movies.
Just
I'm glad you're
like
catching
like
on
five
with
minutes
the,
ago.
Well, to give you an idea, the last one we did, Harold and Kumar's 3D Christmas beat It's a Wonderful Life.
Harold and Kumar's 3D Christmas went to the finals against Scrooge.
Someone was that passionate about it.
This fucker over here.
Yeah. Good job.
All right. And it's fun because Elliot's a lawyer, which means that not only has he been trained how to argue, he's been trained how to argue against things he knows is wrong.
You put it out of your head. You just go, I don't...
Even if he knows he's bullshitting, like, he'll just stick with it fiercely, so...
9/11. You just mentioned 9/11 a whole bunch of times.
You can't do that every time.
It's the winger method.
Hey.
We start doing movies based on true events. You can bring up 9/11 all you want. We're doing the remake tournament right now. We're here to decide the best remake once
remake
and
of 9/11.
For all.
Well, that was a remake of Pearl Harbor.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, that one was bad. I'm sorry.
No, I'm leaving it in. Fuck you.
Round one. Fight!
All right, JC, so who's up first here? What do we got?
Well, only because I'm nervous, I don't want to go first.
Must be nice.
Sounds like prom night.
Wait, is prom night on here?
No.
But the prom is.
We'll start with Man on Fire versus Man Who Knew Too Much.
And that is... Oh, God damn it! It's me and Elliot. All right.
It usually is just me and him.
All right, do you want to go first or second, Elliot?
I'll go second.
All right, well, I will go first. And as soon as you're ready, Mr. Jeremy Kirk, you may start the timer.
Ready and go.
So there's a lot of filmmakers out there who feel like they are talented enough to remake a classic, to remake someone else's work. And that's, you know, that in and of itself is bold. But what's more bold to me is when a filmmaker says, I've already made a film, but I think I can do it better. And they actually go out and remake their own stuff. And that is exactly what happens here with Hitchcock's The Man Who Knew Too Much. Now, the great thing about this is that the original film is really, really solid. The remake is even better. It is the clearest example of a director, of a filmmaker who is learning from his past and immediately applying without any ego the things that he has learned to creating something even better. It is about the ever evolving and ever changing nature of art, and it's a beautiful thing. And on top of that, it's just a really terrific spy movie that I feel is something that you can enjoy on a more substantial level than just, you know, basically killing people by shoving grenades up their ass. But, you know, that really comes down to personal taste. But all I know for sure is that Hitchcock made it great once and he made it great a second time.
Time.
Boom. So that is my argument. Elliot, are you ready?
Yeah. You ready? And go.
My argument for Man on Fire is very simple. It has three main points. First, you have Denzel Washington at the top of his game, playing an unapologetic and unremorseful killer who is trying to relax, but some people push him a little too far. And instead of doing the standard revenge movie thing where he finds Jesus and he sort of backs off, he's like, no, I am the sheep that got lost. And I don't give a shit. I'm going to kill everybody. Anybody who opens their eyes to me. Second, it has the emergence of Dakota Fanning as a star. Now, that didn't last as long as we want to, thanks to maybe Hound Dog, but she was great in it. And three, again, it's a movie that doesn't cheap out. It's a movie that says, you know what? You can get revenge on all these people. You can kill every gangster in Mexico. You can get her back. But there is a price to be paid, because in the real world, there's always a price. You get nothing for nothing. And at the end, spoilers, he dies. And that really lends it to be taken more seriously than, oh, everything turned out great, it's happy, and we're going to go off into the ether. And also, it has Christopher Walken being awesome.
Time.
Christopher
good,
Walken.
Good, right good call getting the Christopher Walken in there at the very last minute.
I don't agree with your tactics, but I respect the hell out of what you said. Anyway.
So now's the time to declare a winner. Hold on, quick.
Are we going to do any kind of rebuttals?
Do we want to do a rebuttal?
I think I didn't really attack what he said, so I don't think we need it.
Yeah, you don't really need rebuttal.
I mean, if we want to do that for other rounds, I don't care. I'm not a rules guy.
I think if the second person then directly attacks that first person, then yeah, rebuttal. But if you just sort of stay,
You can demand a rebuttal.
Yeah.
If you want a rebuttal, you can demand a rebuttal.
I'm gonna rebut.
You can't rebut.
It's okay. Like
you're on the outside. You're an observer.
So is it like calling your own fouls?
No, it's like calling somebody else on their fouls. So
I know. Yeah.
God damn it, Elliot.
JK.
Like Cartman.
Yes, I'm going to have to give that round to Elliot.
All right.
Oh, wow.
So, Man on Fire.
I admire your passion, Brian, and
incorrect.
I think
that's fine.
You spent 30 seconds just talking about Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah,
and
who made the movie.
And right, but Elliot gave more details about the specific movie and why.
Oh, yeah, that's because I can't remember Man Who Knew Too Much.
I like that passive aggressiveness. It's really coming through.
No, I actually can't remember The Man Who Knew Too Much.
I don't think I asked for a rebuttal.
No, you didn't.
Like a real judge.
You get one anyway. All right, what's up next,
Jason? Don't worry, you'll win one.
All right, so we'll go Thing versus Blowout, which is Adam has the Thing and I've got Blowout.
Thing versus Blowout.
Now, that sounds like an interesting Saturday night.
I'm going to blow out your thing. All right, who wants to go first?
I'll go first, since JC hasn't gone before. So.
Okay. All right, well, Adam, we will put 1 minute on the clock.
Go.
So the Thing is the basis of which practically all remakes are actually compared against. Like it's the pinnacle of the pinnacle. But the reason why it is up to that level is, one, as a standalone movie, it's basically it's the pinnacle in a lot of ways. It's one of the pinnacles of practical makeup effects. And during a decade where practical effects were actually the basis for all sci-fi fiction. I mean, there wasn't a lot of computer generated imagery. It's about as good as it can possibly get. In fact, they had to almost create an Academy Award just to give it to it in that respect. But as far as taking an original concept and putting it into a new world, I think the thing takes that concept of a being coming into Earth and being strange and making something very, very terrifying out of it, by making the entire organism itself be individual pieces that can essentially take on worlds onto itself.
All right. So that is Adam's argument for the thing. Now,
Pinnacle?
JC. Pinnacle. Pinnacle. JC, are you ready to argue for Blowout?
I am.
All right.
And go.
So I love Blowout, but I'm not going to admit, in this matchup, I am a Princeton at the number 16 seed versus number 1 Duke. because the thing is fantastic. But Blowout is equally fantastic. Great dramatic film, written really well, part of the Criterion Collection. John Travolta in a really cool role. Nancy Allen in a much different role than you'd expect from her, considering her role in RoboCop. John Lithgow plays a fantastic villain. All around, this is one of the best sounding movies from the 80s. I'm not too familiar with the film it's originally based on, but it really delves into the world of... It's one of those films that delves into the world of filmmaking in a really interesting way, from the sound of sound effects. You'll learn a lot about that aspect of it, and it's just an all-around great, fantastic film.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Just let it run out. Just let
the clock run out. I'm going to save that second for my next... No, I'm kidding.
As someone who has not seen either The Thing or Blowout, what? JC, you made... What?
You haven't seen The Thing. Oh, he's a judge! Sorry. All right, sorry.
Yes, I've never seen The Thing.
Hey, I work with this guy. I have to expect that shit from time to time. Anyway.
You just told him who he was.
Yeah, I know.
You made a very good argument as to why I should watch Blowout, but you started your argument with The Thing's a better movie, basically. yeah. So, I guess you have to give that to Adam.
He surrendered.
Rebut!
pretty much surrendered in the first 5 seconds.
Like, there's a movie in the Sting, and then there's a scene in the argument.
I
was wrong.
I feel like you could have pointed out that I don't... See, the thing about Blowout is that it's technically a remake of Blow Up by Antonioni. But the thing is, it feels more like a remake of Rear Window than it does Blow Up, to me.
Well, yeah, because it's De Palma.
Well, yeah.
He's always remaking Hitchcock. So it's no matter what he's remaking.
Of two different films at once, yeah. Which I think is very impressive.
Which is basically Sisters as well.
That's true.
It sounds like a cocktail or anything. It's like,
yeah.
That's kind of what De Palma does with remakes, mm-hmm. is that he takes a concept of another movie and puts it into the hands of Hitchcock.
Yeah.
Like, if Hitchcock was to remake a movie, that's kind of what it would look like.
Right. Yeah.
If Hitchcock remade the Lego movie.
I'm not here to fight your battles for you, JC. I will let you lose on your own. So, who's up next? What do we got next?
All right. So, let's go with Ocean's 11 versus The Birdcage, Elliot versus Adam.
This should be fun.
All right.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
All right.
Ready? And go.
Ocean's 11 is a great movie for four main reasons here. First, you have the cast that is basically the cinematic equivalent of the Avengers. You got George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, Julia Roberts, all at the height of their success. And if you're going to take in the other two into account, you get Catherine Zeta-Jones as well and a few other people. Second, you have a master director at his top, directed some of the best actors in Steven Soderbergh, and the cinematography and the lighting is just amazing. You have a story that makes us believe that there's a real motivation for why they're doing this besides just money. George Clooney says it's never just about the money. You want somebody hurt him, he wants to hurt him back, and you know what? If you gamble long enough, the house always wins unless you wait till the time when you have enough on the line and you bet big and you take the house. That's exactly what he did. And oh, by the way, for movies that are so obsessed with twist, this movie did it better than I think any other movie has ever done it, to where you can't... I defy somebody to tell me that they saw that twist coming when they saw that air freshener in that police van. And also, you got Julia Roberts, right, who's just fine.
Okay, how do I turn that off?
Don't. I like that.
All right. Don't touch my phone.
No. I just like that it ends up on the recording. Like, okay, well, that's clearly when time is up.
It's a nice character.
It's a nice auditory cue. All right, Adam, are you ready?
Ready, doggy.
And go.
Okay. Well, first of all, I think The Birdcage deserves major props for starring Robin Williams in a role in which he's actually not the gayest character in a movie in which is full of gay characters. So, offhand, the movie deserves great props for that. But beyond that, Robin Williams actually portrays a gay character in a way in which you like he's not the flamboyant character that you expect to see in a movie like this, basically the Nathan Lane character. And the relationship between the two of them, you can sort of understand how it is that kind of relationship actually works, and how it is that the son that they're trying to bring into this world, and that they're trying to that he's trying to adopt them to the world around them, that he can so basically you can find the lovable aspect of that whole family dynamic, even though it's not, I guess, as you consider conservative. So it's a heartfelt way, it's a heartfelt way of looking into something that we consider maybe a little bit taboo, especially for that time period.
All right, well done,
good job. That was close. I'm gonna have to give it to Elliot.
Oh, I forgot Elliot had already argued. I was waiting for him to make his case. All right.
Yes, that was close with Adam going by himself. He was very close to himself.
All right, so Ocean's 11 advances. All right. And what's next, JC?
The Fly versus the Good, the Bad, the Weird.
The Fly versus... I've got The Fly?
Yep.
Who's got The Good, the Bad, and the Weird?
Me.
All right. I'm going to let you go first on this one.
Cool.
Ready?
Yeah.
And go.
So this is a really fantastic movie. It's probably going to be one of the more obscure ones of the 16 that we named. But for me personally, this is one of the films that kind of opened my eyes to the different types of films, especially foreign, that you can enjoy. It's got a little bit of everything, which is why it's called The Good, the Bad, the Weird. It's funny, it's dramatic, got fantastic action. The Korean villain from the G.I. Joe films is actually in this movie. The director has directed some really fantastic movies, including... can't remember the name of that movie. The one... I'll think of it in a second. but yeah, this is one of the funniest movies you'll see that you've probably never heard of. Fantastic action again, just a great all-around film. I got nothing else.
Was it I Saw the Devil?
I Saw the Devil, yeah. That's what it was.
So, point of order, do I also have to use the word fantastic for everything?
Two.
Is that something I need to... One. Oh, I'm sorry. That was still JC's. Fantastic. <for asking. laughs> I'm sorry. Alright, so I gotta argue for The Fly. Okay.
Okay. I think you can do that.
Transform. I think I can do it.
And go.
One of the scariest things in any horror movie is the idea of losing our identity. That's actually a theme that runs through a lot of even the classic horror, even the horror novels that became the Universal Monsters and so on and so forth. And David Cronenberg's The Fly is one of those rare situations where you take a great movie and you make it something that is even greater. And not only that, but it has its own identity, and it's all about... That's exactly what you lose in this film, because it's about a man who is so addicted to the idea of being the first to do something that he doesn't really consider the possibilities or the repercussions. It's a very classic playing God story. And the practical effects alone, that with Jeff Goldblum's performance, make this the centerpiece to any horror collection. I mean, everybody, even people who don't like horror films, have seen and most likely like The Fly, because it is just one of those films that hits you in such a weird, visceral way and reminds us why we like horror in the first place. So, yeah.
I'm going to make that go off every time.
I'm glad. I'm glad you'll do that.
Yeah, Brian, you clearly won that
one. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I just wanted to win one.
If you say so.
Definitely. Okay, so what do we got up next here?
Scarface versus Dawn of the Dead.
Ooh. Who's versus who here?
I've got Scarface, Elliot's got Dawn of the Dead.
All right, who wants to go first?
I can go first.
Okay.
So, Elliot, are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, okay. Let's do this.
And go.
Dawn of the Dead is great for three main reasons. First, they take the action of the first movie, pump it up to a level that you hadn't seen before. They take zombies who are usually shambling and just put them in a canyon fucking sprinters. That is really terrifying, because when I'm watching a zombie movie, especially like I'm watching Walking Dead, I'm like, well, I could probably outwalk them with a brisk pace. And it makes it a lot more real. Second, you got the cast of characters is very strong, in that you got the one character who ironically is Phil Dunphy from Modern Family, is the biggest prick of all time in there. You got the hero who gets taken down a notch. You got Mekhi Phifer trying to take care of his zombie baby. It's all in just the cast of characters is so strong and well developed that you actually care about what happens to them. When that zombie baby comes out, you're like, oh no, not the zombie baby. Okay, then three, the setting that they actually have to move, and they give you sympathy for a guy across the way who was in a gun shop, who you would normally in a lesser movie would be like, oh, he's the prick that's going to take all their shit. But he's like, no, you want to save him. And it's just a great movie for those reasons.
Did you say Shyamalan?
Shyamalan. It's when they're walking really slowly, but then twist, they were dead the whole time.
Well, it's when they're walking really slowly, but they take time out of the movie to kill a bunch of critics.
Ah.
When I was walking, I'm dead. Yeah, okay. So that is Dawn of the Dead, and Elliot argued it. I don't know why I'm still talking. So, JC, are you ready to do Scarface?
I am.
Ready. Right. And go.
No other movie in the history of cinema has ever given rappers, athletes, and wiggers a plan for life. First you get the money, then you get the power, then you get the women. This is what all athletes, rappers, and wiggers live by. You've seen Spring Breakers. Obviously, he was a big fan of Scarface. He admitted it. Just a great movie all around. Al Pacino in one of his all-time roles. The ending even aped in, to a certain extent, spoiler alert, in Breaking Bad. Not exactly, but almost. It was alluded to. So many films ape a lot of the things that are done in this movie. It's just one of the epic films of all time. That's all I got.
12, 11.
I really hope you guys have already seen the ending of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I mention one thing about Dawn of the Dead?
Do you want to take his 5 seconds?
Yeah, I do. It opens with a great Johnny Cash song.
All right. Oh, that's actually a good point.
And you almost had me with Mekhi Phifer.
This is a movie. There is Mekhi Phifer.
That was a Lose Yourself reference.
Yeah, I did. I just lost myself in that reference.
Honestly, yeah, I think JC got that one. Right. I'm going to give that one to JC.
Scarface advances.
And yes, many, many references in Breaking Bad to Scarface.
The whole fact that they're watching Scarface at one point, Walt Jr. are watching Scarface. And as soon as you see that, you're like, oh shit, I think I know how this show's going to end now.
Yeah. It's also the point, I mean, Scarface is a remake, but I'm surprised they haven't remade Scarface again at this point.
I think they're planning on it.
And it's funny, too, because a lot of people don't realize that Scarface is a remake. It's a remake of an old Paul Mooney gangster film, which is actually based on a book by Armitage Trail, which is itself based on the life of Al Capone. So, yeah. So there's a lot of... that's why the movie's called Scarface. That's why the character is called Scarface, is because that's Al Capone's nickname. That's not relevant to anything that's happening right now. But the next debate on the docket is...
Yeah, sorry. I was just so excited that I wanted to debate. The Ring versus Fistful of Dollars.
Versus Fistful of Dollars, which I believe I'm taking Fistful of Dollars.
You're taking Fistful of Dollars. You go first.
It's the hand debate.
All right. Okay. All right. I'm going first with Fistful of Dollars.
All right, go.
What's funny about Fistful of Dollars is everybody knows it's a remake of Akira Kurosawa's Yojimbo. What they don't know is that Yojimbo is actually based on an old Dashiell Hammett story. So this isn't just a remake, it's a remake of a remake, which if anyone's ever used a copy machine before, you know that sometimes a copy of a copy doesn't come out quite as clear, or anyone that's seen the movie Multiplicity. But Sergio Leone's Fistful of Dollars, which is the movie that really solidified Clint Eastwood as a major Western movie star, is one of those films that takes everything that was great about Yojimbo and brings it into an entirely new universe, a sweaty, pockmarked, violent, bloody universe, way more bloody than Kurosawa was able to get away with Yojimbo. And yet every major piece of that story, every iconic moment, every great character that we know and love is present in this new Western universe, in this dusty ghost town run by two gangs. And there have been multiple readaptations of Seven Samurai or of Yojimbo since. None as great as this one. Sweet. All right. Are you ready for the ring?
I'm ready. What? Hold on, you turn it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Adam's about to step into the ring.
And go.
So I think one of the greatest compliments you can pay to probably any movie is that its existence and its success spawns an entire subgenre unto itself. So that's basically what the ring was to the U.S. audience. It basically took the original concept of the original Japanese story, takes it and makes it, you can argue, makes it a little bit more, I guess, Hollywood, but still keeping very creepy elements with it that completely flew in the face of jump scares and actually maintains a very interesting mystery story unto itself. And so you take that and you put that in front of an audience that has never been exposed to that before, and you've created an entire 10 years worth of horror movies to follow since. So, I mean, it's hard to argue against a movie being that influential and spawning everything to come up after it that, I mean, everything to come up after it can even pale in comparison to that original that's based off of the remake.
May I have a rebuttal? I would like a quick rebuttal. My quick rebuttal is this. That is, that's true about The Ring, but you could also make the same argument for Fistful of Dollars, which launched not only the Man with No Name trilogy, but redefined what a spaghetti western was and really made that genre popular, much in the same way that The Ring made J-horror and J-horror remakes in the States a popular genre. So I feel like there's equal footing there, at the very least.
Do you have another rebuttal?
Nope.
Oh, redirect. No. Oh, it's redirect. So I'm not a lawyer. Honestly, Adam had that one won until the rebuttal.
He did. What I thought as soon as I heard him say rebuttal, like, oh, shit.
Yeah, because he was making a very good point as to why The Ring was very influential.
How much
didn't
do you
really
hate me
do.
Right now, Adam?
I love his will of dollars, so I don't care.
To see that. All right, what's up next?
The Blob versus True Grit.
Blob versus True Grit. Who's got what here?
You've got The Blob. I've got True Grit.
All right. So do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first.
All right. JC is going first, and he is going... You're True Grit, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And go.
So this is a film directed by the Coen brothers, and there aren't a lot of Coen brothers movies that I enjoy the first time out. This is one of the few. You got a great ensemble cast all the way up and down. Including an Academy Award breakthrough performance from Hayley Stanfield, who I think was 13 or 14 at the time, just blew it out of the water. One of the most well-written Coen Brothers films as a Western. It, to me, really kind of brought back the Western genre that had been sort of dead for a really long time. That's all I got.
You leave more and more time.
That's, you know what? I'm not even going to snake his time. I'm going to use the last 10 seconds just to drink this beer on my...
Yeah. He's like the Jay-Z of debates where he just throws up the diamond sign at the end.
He's the JC of this debate. Come on, man. Get the dirt off your shoulders.
Nothing about J.K. Simmons or nothing?
I brought up the cast.
He's not in True Grit.
Oh, well, oh, that's right. He's the voice of the lawyer.
Mistrial.
The voice of the lawyer.
Yeah, I was going to say, I brought up the cast.
I was thinking he was the guy. That was the guy. That
I brought up the cast, but I couldn't remember everyone other than Matt Damon and Hayley Stanfield, so I didn't want to, like...
And there was a guy from Tron, too, right? Yeah. Bridges.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, him. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That guy's in it.
So...
He's just some dude.
Jeff Bridges.
Alright, and go.
So it's a popular myth that when you're remaking a film, you have to go serious. You have to take any and all tone that was in the original film and go darker, go heavier, make it more, basically make it a more intense experience for a modern audience for them to enjoy it. The Blob remake from the 80s, which is remaking the classic 50s drive-in movie, absolutely just flies in the face of that logic. It makes a movie that is every bit as cheesy as its predecessor. However, it comes up with creative new ways to kill, creative new practical effects to use. It knows that it can be a little bit more explicit with its violence, but at no point does it lose its sense of humor. And I mean, if nothing else, seeing Johnny Drama in an actual movie, after watching him fail for so long on Entourage to get a single part outside of, the Barbarian TV show, was just exquisite. And I defy you to find a better PSA for not talking during movies than when the Blob sucks that guy up from the back row as he's talking during the horror film.
Good job. Blob wins that one.
All right. Blob it up. All right.
Can I have a little sidetrack for...
Yeah,
for
go for Margaret? It. Go for it.
Something that I think I realized recently about the Coen Brothers' True Grit...
Uh-huh.
I have a question for you guys. Do you think Matt Damon lives at the end of that movie?
Oh, do you think? I thought you meant does he live on set now? And I was like, no, I think he's in a place in Malibu.
I think he's dead.
At the end of that, yeah. They don't show it.
Yeah, it's an interesting question.
They don't show it. But at the end, she says that she never heard from him again.
Yeah,
he has. I think clearly he has head trauma.
I think that's the conclusion.
And he's way out there. I never caught that until I've seen that movie probably 10 times, and I just caught that.
If I'm not mistaken, I think that character does die in the original.
He does die in the original. That's why it amazed me that I never saw that.
There's also the thing to consider that, like, if you're talking about the time frame in which that movie takes place, not hearing from somebody ever again doesn't necessarily mean that they've died.
I agree. But he's in the middle of Indian territory. He's got that
giant head wound.
Yeah.
He's days from anybody getting to him. I think he probably died.
Yeah. At least Bridges
had... At the very least, he wasn't long for this world.
Yeah, at the very... You know, Bridges at least had the good sense to have his head injury before that film even started.
Exactly.
You know, based on how he chose to mumble his way through it.
I can't do nothing for you, boy.
I just think it's another testament to how the Coens... They don't tell us everything.
Yeah.
But they do tell us everything by not telling us everything.
Well, did this movie have an ending?
Stop that. No Country for Old Men has an ending. Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
That's not an ending. But that's not the Coen brothers' fault. Yeah. That's Cormac McCarthy's fault.
Okay. It may not be the ending you want, but there is a fucking ending.
Is it the ending,
ending
I deserve?
Well, that's the see, it's
it
that.
It's you? Yes.
It's that the movie doesn't have the climax. I think that's the problem. It's, or right. What people's yeah. problem yeah. is with it. It's like they expected something up at a given point, and they just don't get
it. Maybe if you stop masturbating to the movies, stop being so concerned with whether or not there's a climax.
But how is my hand going to stay chafed?
That's a good question.
What's funny about that is anything that Cormac McCarthy has to do with, eventually you'll learn. You'll get to the point where it's like, oh, wait, this is about to end, right? Yep, it's over.
And it's over.
So it's like an anti-Judd Apatow film.
No, it's like that scene in South Park where it's like, we're going to take your money, we're going to put it into a money market, and it's gone!
It's kind of a combination of both, because these movies are really long, just like Judd Apatow movies, and then they just kind of end.
Judd Apatow.
The 30 minutes too long.
This is 40 hours long. Yeah, okay, so this is the last debate of the first round, and then we will decide our Elite Eight will be crowned. Yep. So what's the final debate?
The Departed, Elliot, versus Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Adam.
Ooh. Ooh. Do, Adam's not gonna win. Do.
Way to jinx me.
I'm just saying, man. I'm just,
no, you go first. It's duck season.
I'm just saying, there is no possible way that Elliot can fuck this up. Absolutely not.
I hate you so much.
All right.
I'll go first,
though. Oh, you're going first? Okay, well, you know, you should go first, because there's no way you can fuck it up, so.
I hate you so much. All right, and go.
Okay, The Departed is a great, great movie for a few different reasons. One, it's a great remake of, I think it's a Chinese film, Infernal Affairs. And they actually did a better job than the original, which is rare. Second, it finally got Martin Scorsese his Oscar, which is great, which there was a joke a few years ago where I think it was, I forgot the host, but he's like, you know, at this point it is 3-6 Mafia 1, Martin Scorsese 0. And then it just tells this very complicated story in such a great way and that you can actually follow, which is really rare for stories like this. You usually end up, you know, saying, okay, well, I need a flow chart. Like, for instance, if you watch a very similar movie, different setting, but similar, called Basic with John Travolta, I'm sitting there and I'm like, I have no idea what's going on, but I should. And I don't know if that's my fault or the director's fault. The director did such a great job of explaining how all the moving pieces put together. And Jack Nicholson was great. You got DiCaprio. You got Martin Sheen. You got Marky Mark. I'm sorry, he's always going to be Marky Mark. Fuck him. He's in the Funky Bunch. He was the lone survivor of the Funky Bunch. And that is why I would say the parts were better.
Did you did you say the Fuck Him Bunch?
The Funky Bunch.
The lone survivor in the Funky Bunch.
No, too soon for that spoiler.
I just saw that last night. God, it was good.
Well, I didn't, so thanks for that. I'm kidding.
I didn't spoil it.
I didn't see it either, but I also don't give a shit.
Everybody dies in Lone Survivor?
Shh. I don't know that based on the title. Okay, so Adam, you are up with Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Okay.
Everybody dies.
Wait. I'm assuming we mean the 70s.
78
Kaufman, not Abel Ferrara.
No.
Okay.
Right. Abel Ferrara.
That's just a book called Body Snatchers, though. I
thought. Oh. What? Are you serious?
Sorry. Oh, wait, we're not doing the Invasion?
Not big Daniel Craig sci-fi fans.
The Faculty, and go.
Right. So, oh, good lord.
Invasion of Body Snatchers.
The thing about the Invasion...
Think about Josh Hartnett. The thing about Josh Hartnett.
All right.
Cedric and Jansen.
Your minutes.
Nobody's going to see anything.
Yeah, I know.
Now I feel like a battered wife. I don't want.
All right, go.
So the thing about the '70s remake of The Invasion of the Body Snatchers, one is you can tell that it's actually a great story to start with because it's been remade 3 times since then. This one actually does the best out of all 3, and in fact, I'd argue it actually does the best out of all 4, and going over even the original, but. The thing that really puts the nail on, that really drives this movie home is the ending. I mean, the last 5 minutes of the movie in which everything sort of comes together and you don't understand necessarily until the final 10 seconds just how good this movie is with the final closing shot. So you take an entire mystery film and an incredibly tense and suspenseful and just utterly terrifying one at that, and then you cap it to the point where the last 10 seconds completely just not only makes everything seem that much better, but actually makes the whole movie as a whole really fit together all the way through to the end.
Boom. Done. Adam won that one.
What? Oh! Wait a minute, but I said Elliot was no possible
I knew
way.
He won it as he
there,
was going.
There was no possible way that Elliot could fuck that up, and then he spent 30 seconds talking about the Oscar that Scorsese won.
Yeah! Okay, first of all, I knew Elliot lost the minute he said that he couldn't follow the plot of Basic.
Yeah, and
Basic was confusing.
Bringing it, well...
The movie is called...
That might be...
Wait, the movie is called... Basic.
Okay, tell me the plot.
I haven't seen the movie, but it's called
Basic.
Have you
seen Basic? How can you make an assessment?
You haven't
because
seen Basic?
It's called Basic. It's basically...
I thought that
called
was...
Basic. It's called Basic.
I thought that was... That doesn't matter. It is a very convoluted movie. It's actually a good movie.
It's in reference to Basic Training. It's not really...
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like the day I can't follow the fucking plot of a Travolta
yeah,
movie,
there's a lot of side-swapping.
It's entertainingly convoluted.
Yeah. I thought it was very interesting that you even brought
like,
it up.
I hadn't thought about it in years, but it's like, I had to look
this,
for...
This is the
it's
thing
like,
that's
after,
great.
It's like after about 40 minutes, you realize, man, this is ridiculous. And it just keeps on going, and it's like, man, it just can't get more ridiculous. And then,
this is the great thing about Elliot, is when you only have about 8 movies in your well, then those are the... Like, those
he's
movies...
Seen Basic.
Yeah, he's seen the movie Basic, you know.
The Departed and Go. Let me tell you about Basic.
Yeah. You never know, man. You are a fucking wild card. I never know where you're going to go, what you're going to pull out. I'm very happy to have you on this team.
I am too. Honestly, otherwise we would never have brought up Basic. And I think that's a travesty.
This is true. You have like an instinct for Basic. That's what I like about it.
I hate everybody at this table.
Tate Diggs is good at Basic.
So our Elite Eight, as it stands right now, our Elite Eight are Man on Fire, The Thing, Ocean's 11, The Fly, Scarface, Fistful of Dollars, The Blob, and Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
You know, if I were on like a desert island and those were the only 8 movies that I had for the rest of my life,
yeah.
I think I'd be good.
Yeah, you'd
with
be pretty happy.
How do you know? You haven't seen any of them.
Be fine with that. From what I've heard, you guys are. Oh my god!
You know, there is one movie missing on this list: 2 VHS copies of Basic. Other than that, yeah, it's pretty standard. So we're going to take a short break here, and when we come back, we are going to whittle this Elite Eight down to 1 champion. Stick with us.
I need Blogman's Beard Wax. Blogman's Beard Wax. When you need to look like you're in the know about things no one needs to know about. Blogman's Beard Wax.
Thank you for coming back. We really do appreciate it. And I mean that sincerely. Thank you for not running away. We are down to the Elite Eight in our movie elimination tournament all about remakes.
Round 2. Fight!
The first game of the Elite Eight is going to be Man on Fire versus The Thing. So we're going to have Elliot going head-to-head with Adam Charles. Gentlemen, who would like to go first? Both of them far too polite to actually decide who's going first. All right, so Elliot, it falls to you to give us why Man on Fire is better than The Thing.
All right, and go.
Okay, well, I've already gone over the cast and some of the story, but what I want to talk about this time is great movies do more than tell you an engaging story. They teach you something about yourself and about life. Man on Fire does that by presenting very complex themes of regret, remorse, redemption, and that you know you don't always find the villain in the most comic places. About the villain, you got Mark Anthony turns out to be the villain just because he's trying to cheat his insurance. You got redemption and remorse by this guy, Denzel Washington's character Creasy, has been a remorseless killer his entire adult life. This what he did is what he was good at, and he's trying to just relax and just you know essentially wait for death. However long that takes, until he finds something to believe in Dakota Fanning, and he, through that loss, he turns it into something positive, and that teaches you about, you know, in life, a lot of times bad things happen, but you can either sit back and do nothing about it, or you can use that for something positive, and that's what Man on Fire shows you if you read a little bit, just a little bit under the surface into it, and that's why it's such a great movie and a great remake.
Elliot does not wish he had more time. Adam, it falls to you to defend The Thing, and...
So one of the things I really like about The Thing is how it puts forth an idea that the great leaders can come from basically anywhere within the group. I mean, the Kurt Russell character is not necessarily somebody who from the outside you would look to be the leader of that particular group, to want, be the one to sort of rally everybody around, keep them calm, but also move them forward in a state of just complete paranoia where nobody knows who is actually a threat in that entire group. He's level-headed. He is dangerously, you can argue, dangerously protective of everybody else within the group and also of himself. But he's basically just the helicopter pilot. I mean, he's nobody else to that group. In a room full of scientists, of very thoughtful thinkers, he is the one. He's the one being the most level-headed about the situation and being sure that they can all almost make their way out of it to the point where he's the last one surviving. And that's something that very few films are able to do and do so very convincingly.
It's about the everyman. It isn't a Hitchcock movie after all. What do you know?
I think Adam won that one.
You think Adam won that one? All right. Well,
give the edge to that one.
That one goes to The Thing.
Yay for the helicopter pilot.
Is this my beer?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I'm taking it.
That was the important thing. Now. The important thing to come out of that debate is I was waiting for it to be over so I could ask you if that was my beer.
Is that my beer? Because I've been drinking it.
All right. What's up next here?
Next is Ocean's 11 versus The Fly.
Ocean's 11 versus The Fly. Again, I find myself competing with Elliot. Okay.
Like most podcasts.
Would you like to go first or second, Mr. Elliot?
I can go second this time.
You're going to go second? All right. Well, fuck it. Go for it.
All right. And go.
There are a few luminaries on this planet who have reached the heights of artistic expression, who have changed the way we fundamentally think, like Jeff Goldblum. And I feel like The Fly is the apex of everything that is Goldblum. I mean, you can talk all day about Jurassic Park. You can even talk all day about Mr. Smith or whatever that movie was. But the point of the matter is that The Fly is the movie we see the most sides of Goldblum. We see the handsome, I should be in Playgirl Goldblum. We see the thoughtful, almost manically imaginative Goldblum. We see the slowly decaying and turning into a giant human fly Goldblum, which is sadly lacking from most films, not only of that era, but today. I feel like if every film had a scene in which Jeff Goldblum pulls out his own teeth and slowly turns into a human fly, cinema would be in a much better place.
I think you're thinking of Mr. Frost.
Mr. Frost, motherfucker!
Yes.
God damn it. I tried to go too obscure, and then I couldn't even think of the fucking name myself.
That's a very obscure reference.
On a side note, anybody ever see that thing with Jeff Goldblum and Conan O'Brien? It was what? Like Conan O'Brien used to have this little segment where he would bring in a celebrity to do like a 15 segment sort of nonchalant kind of recording. Uh-uh. And for Jeff Goldblum, it was, he said something like, you know, people used to come up to me all the time and they'd ask me, you know, how do you pronounce your last name? Is it Goldblum or Goldblum? And I'd always look at them and I'd tell them all the exact same thing. How dare you speak to me?
Indeed.
Is there any better casting than Jeff Goldblum as Ruxin's father?
No.
Oh my god, that's so great.
Perfect.
Yeah.
With the Ruxin smile.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, Ellie, go.
You know, having a debate about movies, it's sort of a hard thing to do because how do you objectively judge which movie's better? And I put forth that one of the best ways to do this is to judge its effect on the overall society. As far as I know, nobody was really talking about Vegas on the same scale before Ocean's 11 came out. It didn't have that image. It was seedy. It wasn't that fun to be at. But now it's like everybody's like, oh, I'm going to be the Rat Pack. I'm going to come back. I'll be Sammy Davis. He'll be Sinatra. You can be Dean Martin because you sort of suck. And that's what Ocean's 11 did. It took that energy from the first one and just put it to the modern age, which is something you don't see that often. And also, it did that in a way just by showing the glam and the glitz and some of the back parts of it, but having that atmosphere that now Vegas is just a place that everybody wants to go. And I could go on about the story, but I did that in my first round. And also, one thing I can't overlook is just some of the iconic scenes, like at the very end, when they pull off that heist and they're standing in front of the fountains and that music's coming up, that's one of the best moments in all cinema.
I would like a rebuttal. Two things. One, the coda of Casino convinced us that in the early 90s that Vegas had gone too family friendly. Well, the kids play cardboard pirates, mommy and daddy lose the scholarship funds at the casinos. And also, did you fucking say that Dean Martin sucks? Did you say that in my presence?
I say a lot of shit.
You know, Dean Martin is the one who sings Kick in the Head, right? Not Frank Sinatra.
Oh, what? Come on. Are you saying Frank Sinatra sucks?
No. I'm saying, like one of the most iconic songs of all time is "Ain't That a Kick in the Head."
Yeah.
Most people think it's sung by Frank Sinatra, who is awesome.
Okay, who would you say sung is better, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, or Sammy Davis Jr.?
First of all, it's not about who's better between the three of them.
Yeah.
You said Dean Martin sucks. That is the difference.
I stand by my statement.
That's the end of my rebuttal.
Can I just rebut?
Yeah, go ahead.
I would say that even though Vegas was coming back to what it was, it was nowhere near where it was before Ocean's 11 came back out. It just wasn't. All of a sudden, Vegas became a place that bachelor parties wanted to go. And it was a place that you could talk about in open company. And it was like, oh, you want to go to Vegas? It's really cool. It's not, oh, I want to go get a hooker. So that's what I would say.
That's why nobody went to Vegas before.
But you totally can get hookers in Vegas.
No shit, but I'm...
Brian won that debate. Brian, shit.
I just imagine this wasteland of Vegas before Ocean's 11 was made. There's just tumbleweeds rolling down the street, just empty casinos with dealers going, I'm lonely.
And to be fair, Ocean's 11 isn't the movie that did that. The Hangover is the movie that did that.
No, Ocean's 11 did before The Hangover.
Now, Ocean's 11
to an extent. I think The Hangover had a bigger Ocean's impact 11, on Vegas.
Yeah, Ocean's,
I call it shenanigans.
Ocean's 11 made Las Vegas look kind of sexy. But Hangover made
it look
definitely
dangerous.
Where that.
Hangover was like, what did they do? First of all, the Hangover made Las Vegas look dangerous if you're going with Zach Galifianakis, yeah. Which is entirely true and should be something that everybody learns.
Like Hangover, if you go with Zach Galifianakis, you're going to get drugged. If you go with Bradley Cooper, you're not going to get laid because he's going to take everybody.
Right.
I think, if anything, Swingers made Vegas popular.
Boom.
But does anybody remember Swingers outside of movie critics?
Yes.
A lot of people do.
It's an iconic college.
You just say Vegas, baby, Vegas. Everybody knows what you're talking about.
Beautiful Vegas. Money.
I would say not people younger than us. That's all I'm saying. Like, it's Swingers is a very 90s
movie. I don't give a shit what people younger than me think about movies.
People younger than us, I don't think really
people younger than us 11 movies either.
People younger than us are the reason Friedberg and Seltzer have careers. So fuck people younger than us.
I think a strong demographic of the people that listen to this show are people younger than you.
That's what I was about
to say.
I don't
mean
love
everyone.
You guys.
Let me.
I said strong demographic.
What I said was fuck people younger than us, and I stand by that.
One of us,
as long as you're not younger than us, .net, is actually the full title of the website. I'm kidding. Of course, I don't hate everyone younger than me. Just the people younger than me who think Friedberg and Seltzer are legitimate filmmakers. Anyway.
Is the next movie tournament going to be the best Vegas movies then?
It's going to be the best Friedberg and Seltzer movies.
I will kill you.
Oh, wow.
But Dean Martin does suck.
You're so wrong.
That is so wrong.
I don't understand where that's coming from.
I like messing with Brian.
It's coming from he's just trying to start shit.
Yep.
Elliot, we don't need trolls in the comment section because we have Elliot sitting right here.
I'm not saying I'm a troll, but I spend a lot of time around bridges.
There you go. What's the next debate before I stab Elliot?
Scarface versus Fistful of Dollars.
Who had Scarface?
Ooh, me.
And I had Fistful of Dollars?
Adam.
Adam. I did. All right. So, all right. You want to go first or second, Adam?
I
meant when we get to your debate. Do you want to go first? I just want to know ahead of time now.
Do you like Scarface?
You can go first.
All right, I will go first. Fistful of Dollars, Fistful of Dollars, Fistful of Dollars. Okay.
Sounds like a lot of change.
Ready?
All right, so we've talked about a lot of different movies in a lot of different ways, but I'm going to boil this down to one criteria. I'm going to boil it down to the soundtrack. Yes, Scarface has Giorgio Moroder. That's incredible. But what it doesn't have is the epic and the brilliant Ennio Morricone. Ennio Morricone not only created a soundtrack for that movie that fits that movie, he created a soundtrack for that film that typifies an entire subgenre of film. You can't think of spaghetti westerns without thinking of the scores that Ennio Morricone puts forth. And Giorgio Moroder, you know, he is very much a product of his time. He's very much about the synthesizers. He's very much about the tones, whatever. There is actual orchestration going on with Ennio Morricone that brings that movie to life in a way that it could not possibly have done with any other composer. And again, I'm gonna go back to Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood and Scarface, they're both anti-heroes, but there is one anti-hero we really want to walk away at the end, and it's not Tony Montana. Sweet. All right.
Ready, JC?
Yeah.
And go.
So Scarface is going to be one of those movies that people want to seek out as soon as they can. Kids start listening to rap when their parents tell them not to, and they learn that one of the influences that a lot of rappers and athletes have is Scarface, so they want to figure out what that's all about. This is going to be one of the first movies that any kid will see that has a really large
ensemble cast. It's going to be one of the first times that anyone will ever be exposed to Robert Loggia. This movie is the reason why, when you say the name Robert Loggia, that you know that that man is a badass. This movie launched the career of Michelle Pfeiffer, in addition to Al Pacino, as stated earlier. Just full of iconic characters all around. None more iconic across the lexicon of pop culture than Tony Montana.
He used the word lexicon. I'm nervous. I'm legitimately nervous.
He also forgot to mention Stephen Bauer.
F. Murray Abraham.
Yeah.
But yeah. Robert Loggia.
Robert
Loggia's a good call. But Brian did win that one.
Shit. I may end up having all the movies in the final four. So far I have three of them. So that's going to be interesting. Anywho, we have The Blob versus Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Who has The Blob? Is that me again?
That's you.
Jesus Christ. and then Adam has Invasion. Do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first. Hold on 1 second, though.
Glug, 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 glug.
Some liquid courage.
Delicioso. I wish the audience could see his, like, get hype dance he's going on right now.
I'm taking a picture. Keep going. I'm not kidding. We're going to post this.
Snapchat that shit.
Adam is ready, and Adam, go.
Okay. So, earlier I talked about The Thing and how well it handles the theme of paranoia. I feel like The Thing actually may not even exist as well as it does if not for Philip Kaufman's remake of The Invasion of the Body Snatchers in 1978. That movie is it's the benchmark of how it is you handle paranoia, especially taking over an entire society. People don't even really look to the 1950s original anymore as far as how to handle a modern telling of a story in which everybody, you don't know for a fact who is or who is not what they seem. So taking a theme like that and sort of injecting it with the amount of terror of you don't even know exactly, one, how it's happening, or two, exactly how far spread it is. And you've got a film in which the universe seems so encapsulated into one small city that it actually basically expands out to the entire world, the entire consequences of what actually gets put forth.
All right. Fair points all around. All right.
Ready to defend the Blob?
Yep.
All right, go.
So, Invasion of the Body Snatchers absolutely has a social message that is very important to discuss, and this idea of assimilation and conformity. Now, when you think about conformity, you think about just kind of becoming one giant mass and losing your identity. And you know what other movie I think really epitomizes what it means to be one giant mass is a movie about an actual giant mass from outer space, i.e. a gelatinous blob. The Blob remake from the 80s really does delve into the one thing that I think is missing from every single movie we've talked about today, and is something the 80s did so well, taking control out of the hands of adults. It is one of those great movies where you have kids, a lot of times young people, facing down the supernatural threat. And I think that if we had more of that going on in general in society, we would have less issues, because let's face it, kids are better than adults at a lot of things.
All right. Adam won that one.
Yeah, good, because I was throwing the gun at you. I didn't know what to do.
Yes? You did beat Ocean's 11?
Yeah.
Okay, I had that written down.
All right, so our final four, ladies and gentlemen, as they stand right now, are The Thing, The Fly, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and Fistful of Dollars. Now, I think it's interesting. I actually don't think it's interesting at all. It's pretty much what I expected. 75% of the movies in our final four are horror remakes. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we have the Western remake of Kurosawa. So, interesting stuff going on here. How do you have this broken down in terms of matchups?
So it's you and you versus Adam in both rounds.
Okay.
Thing versus Fly, and then Fistful of Dollars versus Invasion of Body Snatchers.
Wait a minute.
Oh,
Thing versus Fly is me versus me.
No, I'm the Thing.
The Thing.
Oh, you
when
had the
you
Thing.
Ever, when did you ever defend The Thing this whole time?
Oh, I just assumed because it's one of my favorite movies. That's really stupid. Okay, so
the truth be told, I.
Round two, fight!
Okay, we're in the final four. So first up is The Thing versus The Fly, which is actually a matchup I've wanted to see for a long time. But as it stands right now, Adam, do you want to go first or second?
I went first last time. You go first.
All right, I will go first. And whenever you're ready.
Ready and go.
So movies they do a lot of things for us. They serve a lot of functions within society. But the two things that we most want movies to do whenever we sit down and watch them is to transport us and to transform us. The Fly is a literal representation of the two things that we want movies to do. It is about a man who is literally trying to transport himself, trying to break down his matter and move from place to place. That's why it's so encompassing, and that's why the experience of watching this film is so magnificent. And it does transform us, much like Brundle in the movie, slowly degenerating into a human fly hybrid, something disgusting and weird. It challenges us. It makes us think about how we judge people and how important things like looks and other sort of surface level elements are in our own lives. And I feel like by the end of that movie, it's not just Brundle who is transported and then transformed. It's every single person in that audience. Plus, I mean, have you seen the guy's hair? Come on. That alone is worthy of a victory in this department.
All right. Ready?
1 second.
Liquid courage.
Want to do another dance?
That's Ariana. We already got that.
Okay.
Ready? And go.
So, one thing that I've noticed about The Fly is that it does take the exact same concept of the original and basically that it's a man turning into a fly, though to very grotesque extremes with the remake. The Thing takes the concept of just basically an alien from outer space crash landing in the Arctic, and not only just takes it to be a creature who just terrorizes a small group of scientists, but makes its own original creature out of that. And not only an original creature, but an original creature made up of technically endless other creatures, which has never been done before, hasn't been attempted since, because the concept is so original that it can't actually be... You can only mimic it. You can't actually improve upon that. And I think that's something that basically any remake could basically aspire to, that it completely separates itself from the original and puts forth a situation in which anything that tries to come after it can only be it or less.
Done. Would you like to do a rebuttal?
No. No. You good? Okay. I'm solid.
Adam won that one.
Oh, God damn it. I mean, yes, I want to do a rebuttal. Shit. All right.
Well, yeah, he wants an appeal now.
So The Thing is in the finals. That is spectacular. So next up, Adam and I are going to debate again. This time, Fistful of Dollars.
Are you sure you don't want to hand these over to Elliot and Jesse?
No, I don't want any of this handed over to me.
Oh, okay.
Actually, what movies are they?
We haven't seen both of us. Fistful of Dollars and Invasion of Body Snatchers?
No.
Yeah.
Neither one of you have seen either one? Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
Well, all right, then. Who's going first?
I will go first. Okay? I will go first. Yes, I'm good.
You prepared? Mm-hmm. Focused?
Mm-hmm.
Go.
Again, I'm going to come back to the theme of identity, because I feel like that's what we do when we watch movies, is we identify with the characters. We allow ourselves to see a little bit of ourselves in these characters. And what's so fascinating about Clint Eastwood in the Man with No Name trilogy is specifically that he has no identity, that everything that would make him human has been stripped away, and he becomes sort of an amalgam of the spirit of the West, an amalgam of sort of this weird manifest destiny and what it means to be a man. He's a paradigm. I mean, more than a human being, he's a paradigm of everything manly. And I think that's what Sergio Leone does so well, is to use characters as sort of sounding boards for these various constructs. And Clint Eastwood's performance in that movie, you know, a lot of people say he's not doing much, he's just kind of speaking gravelly, whatever, but he represents so many different facets of manhood that he's actually speaking for several different men, and I feel like all of those voices come through loud and clear, even if it is a little gravelly.
Alright. You ready to defend Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
Okay.
Right. And go.
Okay, so we talked a lot about Jeff Goldblum, and I feel like we haven't talked about him enough. So... Invasion of the Body Snatchers, amongst other things that you can actually pinpoint to its influence on not just science fiction overall, but actually Hollywood. But it was one of the first few films to introduce Jeff Goldblum to the world in a very small role, albeit, but in a very subdued Jeff Goldblum-y kind of way, where he didn't actually become Jeff Goldblum yet. And I mean that being the one of the things that's actually one of its minor contributions. Just speaks to how well everything else is just around it. I mean, it's something that gets overlooked quite a bit. But overall, I mean, there's not a whole lot you can really say, not much more you can say about a movie that takes a fantastic classic original that's just as timeless as it is at the time it came out and improves upon it to the time where it, I mean, you can look at the 1978 version to be the epitome of science fiction, especially for an entire decade.
All right.
So fun piece of trivia. The first Jeff Goldblum movie that he was actually in was...
For the first Death Wish
movie. It was the first Death Wish, yep. Yeah, as one of the thugs. Believe it or not, this is not a Jeff Goldblum fan cast, although I feel like we keep coming back to him because he is the center of our universe.
I thought you missed a huge opportunity doing that debate just in Jeff Goldblum voice.
I don't... Jurassic Park when he's like you dig up dinosaurs and they're like yeah and he just goes and it's like what the fuck what why did you just do that why did you choose that as an actor so and why did Spielberg let you do like why did he leave that in do well, a second
like,
take
I like, well I feel like you just did Thomas Hayden Church from Sideways just with a muzzle on your face.
Sam Neill.
What's that?
Is it Adam now Sam Neill?
Yes, Adam has been. Adam's sitting over there like, some people think that perhaps dinosaurs just turned into birds and they flew away.
This is not reality!
Do you read Sutter Kane? Anyway, what were we talking about? Oh yeah, we're in the fucking finals. We have done it. We've whittled it down to two films. The Thing and Fistful of Dollars. Wow. That is a showdown of titans if ever there were one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is basically like number one and number two getting to the finals. I mean,
pretty much.
Wow, there is no Cinderella story here. This could go either way. This is anybody's match at this point.
Yeah, who's debating?
I'm taking Fistful.
It worked out perfectly. Right. Yep.
Cool. Yep. Final round, fight!
It is time now to settle the score. I'm so glad Fistful of Dollars is in the final two, because it feels now like a duel more than a debate. We're just going to line up on opposite ends of the streets at high noon, and you know, last man standing is going to be declared the winner. Adam
One
is
of those
drinking furiously.
Three arms and two heads and...
Yeah. Well, it's a bit of an unfair advantage when you're talking about a shootout to have that extra arm. But...
A spider for a head.
Yeah. it's just terrifying.
It's bad to have a duel with the Thing.
I agree. Adam, are you ready to do this?
I'm ready to do this.
Do you want to go first or second?
Who went first last time?
You guys want to flip for it, actually?
That's a good idea.
Do any of us have a coin?
Damn it.
None of us have a
coin. I can download a coin.
Yeah, give me the bottle cap. give me the bottle cap. Don't carry coins. All right. So this is Shiner bottle cap. Heads
Who
will
thought
be,
of that stupid
heads
idea?
Will be
heads will be the actual ram.
Gentlemen, this is the coin for the day.
All right. Heads is the ram. Tails is the underside. So I'll let
Adam. Ram is Detroit.
So does the winner of the coin toss just call who goes first?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes. All right.
So you can see the pickoff.
I'll let him call it.
You gonna call it?
Go. Heads.
Okay. Hey, incompetent ref.
Okay. First of all, two things.
I know you're trying to be neat, but
then I look down there and there's like three buttons.
Two things. One.
Are they all facing the same way?
It was heads. And two, that was still a better coin toss than Joe Namath. So, congratulations. Adam won the coin toss. Before you like, you know, butterfingered it onto the floor.
I was trying to flip it.
I saw you. It flipped. It was heads. Adam, you decide.
Brian first.
All right, I'm going first. I have a minute on the clock. Fistful of Dollars for the win. Here we go.
Ready?
Yep.
And go.
This is going to be a bit of an emotional ploy, but it really does speak to why this movie is so important to me. This is a movie that I watch with my dad a lot, and it's Westerns have for a long time brought fathers and sons together. It's one of the oldest genres in film. It's been around forever. And again, we talk about a lot of the paradigms of manhood being represented by the Western heroes, whether it's the strong, silent Gary Cooper in High Noon, whether it's Clint Eastwood and his no-nonsense, and you know, he gets the job done, even if it's not pretty. I mean, that's what a Western does. And I feel like Fistful of Dollars, more than any other Western, was that movie for me and my dad that brought us together. And it's a thing that it's like a tradition. It's something that we watch together. And it reminds me of where I came from. My roots as a movie geek are entirely from that man and what he was interested in and what he sort of imparted to me. So Fistful of Dollars, to me, will always be the film that reminds me where I came from and why I am the way I am. So thank you very much.
Well done.
All right. But, no, it's not.
Yeah, like say, like you said several times, like, it's this pretty movie much. That... Yeah.
I have never playing the dead card every time you say it works. Sneaky.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
You came from the loins of Clint Eastwood?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes.
Are you ready?
I am ready.
And go.
Okay, so one thing I think that we've lost sort of this in this whole tournament is how it is what it is we're actually debating over. And I think the debate is actually what is the best remake? Therefore, what is the movie that takes an original concept and turns it into something you would argue to be better? The Thing does that in spades, whereas Fistful of Dollars, I think it's very difficult to argue that anybody could one-up Akira Kurosawa. So, and taking one of Akira Kurosawa's most influential films, and technically you'd make the argument that it's his best film, and tries to do it better, though it does a very amicable job about actually doing so. But as far as The Thing is concerned, I mean, you can't. You're talking about a movie that takes the most important aspect of horror, I think, in terms of visual presentation in its practical effects and how well it constructs that concept of a creature who can be anything at any time and just completely terrorize an entire group of people.
I would like a rebuttal. Mm-hmm. You also could make the argument that the movie is leaps, that The Thing is leaps and bound better than Thing from Another World because it has the balls to actually make the alien a scary alien and not a carrot monster. So I'm actually arguing for you. Yeah.
I was going to say, that's a horrible rebuttal.
Yeah. What you just heard was malpractice.
No, what you just heard is me recognizing that I was going to lose and changing sides like a politician.
Adam, do you want to do a rebuttal and help Fistful of Dollars?
Or do so, you want to... this entire time, I was under the impression that Yojimbo was about a carrot. So...
Oh, okay, Jeremy.
You made a strong case with Paradigms of Manhood, but I think Adam won that one.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, the champion of the movie elimination tournament in terms of movie remakes is John Carpenter's The Thing. Duke has won the tournament, seated number one.
Sometimes that just happens.
All the way through. Sometimes it happens, guys. It can't always be Scrooge versus Harold and Kumar 3D. Right. Sometimes it has to be Duke Syracuse, and that's what we just got right now. So, all right, The Thing has won, is according to us, the experts, I guess, the best of the movie remakes. I feel like this is a lot harder to argue with than our last one, so that's at least
true.
Something.
Yeah.
That's at least something. Well, guys, thank you so much for indulging us in this, and you guys here at the table, thank you so much for taking part. I hope you had as much fun as I did.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Hooray! Jeremy, thank you so much for sitting in and being our
absolutely.
Celebrity judge.
Thank you for having me on.
In fact, you did such a good job. I think we're going to have you back next week when we do our next tournament. But this time, I think you're going to be one of us. You're going to be one
debate.
Of the debaters. Yeah,
I would love to be a master debater.
And yes, and actually,
let's practice.
We're choosing kind of a strange, and I'm going to let you guys know this ahead of time so that you have the opportunity to kind of get your own thoughts together and comments below and comments under the next one and just kind of be there with us. The next category, the next topic that we are going to debate in the totally accurate and desperately important Inside the Locker Movie Elimination Tournament is the Die Hard ripoff. Very strange subgenre of film about a single hero, wrong place at the wrong time, taking on impossible odds. I mean, it became its own genre for a while, and we are going to debate the 16 best examples of a Die Hard ripoff. Now, since this is a somewhat esoteric genre, our friend Elliot over here is going to assume the role of the judge because, as we saw with Mr. Kirk, it's best if you pretend that you haven't seen any of the movies at all. And the only thing I can think of that would be better than pretending you haven't seen any of the movies at all would be to actually not have seen any of the movies at all.
Well, plus I want to be able to sing "Here Comes the Judge." Here comes the judge.
I may have created a monster. This may be a terrible idea.
I might be wearing a robe.
Oh,
and by might, I mean I will.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay.
I'm going to be watching Thurgood the day before.
So it's been said. No tickbacks. So it's absolutely happening. So next week, expect to hear our tournament breakdown of all of the Die Hard ripoffs. And I hope you enjoy that. Remember, once more, you can follow this show on Twitter at ITLcast. You can get all of the previous episodes and whatnot on iTunes. Just search for One of Us in the podcast section. You can follow us individually on Twitter. I am at Bryguy Salisbury.
At JC DeLeon1.
At ITL Elliot.
The underscore carrot monster. Oh, wait, no. The underscore beef.
At Jeremy K. Kirk.
And you are on firstshowing.net. You want to do a little plug real quick?
Yeah, every week I do the reviews for firstshowing.net. They usually go up on Fridays, and we have a podcast over there, The Golden Briefcase. That usually goes up on Thursdays or Fridays.
I really like The Golden Briefcase. Oh, I think it's. I honestly think it's one of the better movie podcasts on the internet.
The other host is Tim Buell.
Yes, Tim Buell, who did our 15 Seconds of Horror that we posted. Good shit, good shit. We love these guys. And we'll be back next week with a new Elimination Tournament. I hope you'll join us as well. But for now, I want to remind you that sports are not just for jocks anymore.